Hello? Can you hear me? Okay. Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Ahmed Al-Said. I'm a software developer on the Azure Websites team. And today I'm going to be taking you guys into a deep dive into what we call the Azure Websites developer experience. My team and I do work on a lot of features that I'm going to be demoing today. So I'm very interested in hearing any feedback you guys have or any questions. However, I do have a lot of material and a lot of demos, so I would really appreciate it if you keep all the questions to the end so that I can go through everything that I want to go through. So with that, let's get started. Let me just skip through that for now. So this session. So I tried to break all the features that I want to talk about into these three major points. Basically, I'm going to be talking about a bunch of features, a bunch of tools for development and deployment. And then I'm going to be talking about tools for debugging investigations, and then finally, management and administration of the website. So the first part, which is development and deployment. First of all, we don't really mandate that you use any development tools. You can use any tools you want, any tools that you're already using, whether that's being Visual Studio, Notepad, Sublime Text. You can use Windows, Mac, Linux. You can really use anything you want. However, when it comes to deployment, which is actually delivering your bits to Azure, there are two main ways to deploy. The first one is you actually build locally in your machine or in your build server or your CI server and take the output of the build and push it into Azure. And that's what Visual Studio does, for example, when you deploy or when you have a project in Visual Studio and choose publish, Visual Studio builds locally and then copies everything to the server using web deploy. Or it can also use FTP. The other way of deployment is using source control, deploying from source control. And what you do there is basically you just push your source files into Azure, and then we detect the type of the project that you're writing, whether that be a .NET project or a PHP project or a Node.js project. We detect the type, and then we build the project. In .NET case, it's MS Build, and then we take the output and we publish it to the site. In Node.js case, it's using npm restore, and then we take the output and publish it. In PHP, it's just copying the files. So these are the two main deployment scenarios. The second one, which is deploying from source control, opens a lot of interesting workflows for you. For example, a continuous deployment workflow, in which case you link a website to an existing source control, that being Visual Studio Online, GitHub, or Bitbucket, or what have you. So you link your website to that repo. And as soon as you push to that repo, we continuously deploy to your site. And that's what I'm going to be demoing as a first demo. However, that's not terribly interesting by itself, so I want to add another concept, which is stage publishing. How many of you know about stage publishing and slots on Azure websites? Okay, so a good number of you do. For those who don't know, traditionally, if you have a website that's like the picture on the left, I think, this one, it's your website, it's receiving production traffic, and then say you have a new version. So you go deploy it to your website. That's going to cause downtime because the app has to shut down and start up again with a new version. Any customer who's currently on your site or any user on your site who's browsing through, suddenly the app is going to become unresponsive. It's going to take a few seconds, maybe 10, 20, depending on the start time of your app, and then it's going to work again. It's not only that, maybe you want to test it before you deploy it. Maybe you're not sure, or maybe there is a certain condition that in the production environment you haven't thought about, and you end up breaking your production site. So you run around trying to fix it or roll back. So it's not an optimum scenario for your users. That's where staging slots come into play. Basically, what we allow you to do is have the staging slot and deploy into it, warm it up, make sure it's working, test it, and when you're happy with it, swap it into production. And what that does, the swap operation in this case is basically on our front end, our load balancer, the traffic just gets swapped directly, immediately. So there is no delay, and you have a high degree of confidence that your code is working because you already saw it working. So I'm going to be demoing that. I'm going to be demoing linking source control into a staging slot and basically pushing into GitHub, and GitHub will deploy directly into the staging slot. So let's see how that works. So here, I have a site that is called Continuous Deployment Demo, and I have a slot under it that is a staging slot. So if I browse to the site itself, it's an empty site that I just created. a minute ago, and then if I browse to the deployment slot, to the staging slot, sorry, it's also an empty site. And if you can look here, the only difference in the URL is that this says staging, and the other one doesn't say staging. So what I would do is I will link this staging slot into GitHub. So let me zoom back out and go into the continuous, into the staging slot, say set up deployment from source control. I'm going to select GitHub. And then that's going to log me into GitHub. I already logged in, so that's why it closed right away. It retrieves my repos. I'm going to pick one repo that I want to deploy, which is this one. And then I want to deploy the master branch. I'm going to hit go. And that basically is going to link my site. It's going to register a hook in GitHub. And as soon as GitHub gets a deployment, gets a push into the master branch, it's going to notify my site. The first time that I link it, we're going to pull anyway anything that's in the GitHub repo and deploy it. And you should see that. There it is. So what's happening now is we're pulling the source files from GitHub. We will detect the type of the project. In this case, it's a .NET project. We generate what we call a deployment script that used to be the command before this. We run it, and that's basically going to deploy the site. Going to deploy the site here. It'll take a second, so. The first deployment usually takes longer than subsequent deployments because we, in this case, it's a .NET app, so we try to restore NuGet packages, and there you go, it's done. So if I go now and look, this is my production site, if you remember. If I refresh it, it's still responsive. It's still very quick. But if I go refresh the staging slot, as you can see here, now it's spinning because it's starting a .NET app, which takes a few seconds to start, while the production slot is very quick. So now that the staging slot is ready, I can test it, and I decided that it's good enough. Now if I go and make a change, I forgot. For example, I don't want to call it ASP.NET. I want to call it something else. So let me change here. I have the project open in Visual Studio. So I'll go very quickly here and change this into being, let me zoom in, into TechEd. Demo. Save. And then if I run git status, I know that this is the file I changed. I'm going to commit. Fix title. And then I'm going to push to GitHub. Asking me to log in. So now I push to GitHub. And if I go quickly here, I'll see immediately a deployment starting. Deployment should start now, any second. Yeah, there it is. And this should be faster than the first one. And yeah, fixed title, and it's deployed. And I can now come here, refresh. Again, it's spinning because the app shut down and started up again. And here's my change. So I'm now happy with my site. All I have to do is come here to my staging slot, hit swap. It's asking me, do you want to swap staging with, let me zoom in. It's asking me, do you want to swap staging with the production? I say yes. And let's go to the production slot here. And boom, it's there. It didn't spin. It didn't do anything because the app is already warmed up. All that happened is on the load balancer, the front end, basically the traffic was swapped. And if I go to the staging, what used to be the staging slot, I now have the old version of the code, which is the empty site. But because this is linked to source control, the next time I do a deployment, it's just going to catch up and be on the latest commit. So that's the very first demo, which is continuous deployment using slots. Now I want to talk, when you choose to deploy from source control, when you choose to deploy from source control, there's actually a lot of logic that's running on the server. I mentioned one, which is we try to figure out what type of app you're deploying, and we try to be smart about how to deploy it and how to run it. In a .NET case, that's basically building the project, for the first string NuGet, building the project, and copying the files. And so how does that work? That works using what we call deployment scripts. But sometimes you want to customize these deployment scripts. So let's see how we can do that. So we give you total control here. You can change the deployment script, you can do whatever you want. And the way you do that is using the Azure CLI tool. This is the node version of the CLI, and basically the way you get it, I don't know if this is, can you all see the command line? Is it large enough? Okay. So if you want to install it, you simply do npm install -g Azure CLI. That's how you get it, and that's going to install it globally on your machine. And then you type Azure, and this is basically the CLI tool. So if I want websites, so I type Azure and then site. And that's going to give me the help for the Azure site. I want the deployment script, so I'm going to type Azure site deployment script. And that's going to give me the help for generating a deployment script. So in this case, I know that I'm deploying an ASP.NET WAP. And then I have to give it the project file. So that's going to be web application, csproj. And then it asks for the solution file. So that's going to be the solution file. And what we'll see now is basically it should generate two files. So it generated these two files. One is called .deployment, and one is called deployment.cmd. So let's take a look at the first one. The first one is actually very simple. It just has a config, which configures how the deployment should go. And it's saying that the deployment command is deploy.cmd. Now, it doesn't have to be deploy.cmd. It can be anything that you want. It can be a PowerShell script. It can be an exe. It can be anything that you want to run. But in this case, it's deploy.cmd. So let's take a look at deploy.cmd. Now, this is a larger file, so I'm going to open it in Notepad. So if I look here, this is the exact same script that we run on the server. So if you look here, basically, there's a bunch of setup here that's not very interesting. And then here's the deployment step. We first restore NuGet, and this is the command we use to restore NuGet. Then we build the file into a temporary path, and this is the command we use. And then we run kudu sync, which basically copies the output into the site root. So let's say I want to customize it. Just for now, I'm just going to change the echo here. Add another echo saying teched demo deployment. And then I'm going to save. And I'm going to commit this change. Adding deployment script. Git add. And then I'm going to push into master. So now that should trigger another deployment on my site. If I go here, and let's go into deployment tab, I should see another deployment starting. And yep, there it is. If I actually go look at the logs in this case, I'm going to see the special echo that we wrote. Running deployment command. Yeah, so adding the deployment script, and if I expand this, I can look at the logs, and here is the deployment that I added. Here's the deployment command that I added, or the echo, sorry. So you can think about a lot of interesting scenarios that you can do with this. You can basically, if your site requires files to be copied into certain locations, if you're required to create some folders or rename files or do any sort of customized deployment, you can do it there. You can do very elaborate things, like for example, here's a sample that actually runs, I don't know why it's... Anyway, you can, for example, run tests before you actually, I think if I do this, I'm going to click here. Yeah. So this is, for example, a deployment script that actually runs tests before it does deployment to verify that your source, if the test fails, the deployment is going to fail. So you can do a lot of elaborate things with custom deployment scripts. The other thing that we can do is, since we control the whole deployment, we can also fire a post-deployment notification. And the way that works is, as soon as the deployment is done, you register a bunch of URLs, and we hit these URLs saying that the deployment is done, and here is the deployment object that describes what happened in the deployment. So let's see how that can work. So I'm going to use a website called Zapier here. How many of you are familiar with this website? OK. So basically, this website allows you to do sort of if this, then that operations. Basically, you build a workflow based on certain notifications. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create what's called a new Zap. And in this Zap, I'm going to say the trigger is an Azure website. And the trigger for an Azure website is a new deployment. So if there is a new deployment, do an action. And the action is going to be a phone call. So I'm going to have it call me whenever there's a deployment to my site. And a phone call. Going to do continue. It's asking me to connect an Azure website. And the way I do that is if I go back to the portal and I go to the configure tab for any of my Azure websites and scroll down a bit here, there's a link that's called deployment trigger. I'm going to copy that link. I'm going to put it here. I'm going to say continue. It's going to test that it can talk to this site. And that's working, so I'm going to do continue. Now it's asking me for the phone. I already have my phone configured. I can only have I can only have a trigger if only a deployment success or only a deployment failure. In this case, I'm going to have it to always trigger a notification. And then it's asking me for the message that's going to read me on the phone. So I'm going to say, I'm going to add a username, for example. So these are all the fields that get to Zapier from Azure. So basically, whenever there's a deployment, Azure sends the API an object that contains all of these things. So I'm going to say that the author, deployed a new version. The status was, and then I'm going to put the status. And the message was, and I'm going to put the commit message. And that's it. I'm going to pick a voice. I'm going to test it. Continue. I'm going to give it a name, Teched. I'm going to turn the Zap on. And that's it. That's all I have to do to configure this post-deployment notification. And then I'm going to come back here. Instead of actually doing a new deployment, I'm just going to redeploy one of the deployments I have. So this one, I'm just going to redeploy. So that should be faster. And after that's done, I should receive a phone call on my phone basically saying that there was a deployment. That usually might take a couple of minutes, so I'm not going to wait for it. So it might take a minute or so. So actually, let's move on. And then when it comes, I'm going to, oh, actually, there it is.
Deployed a new version. The status was success and the message was adding deployment script.
Yeah, so you can imagine a lot of interesting workflows that you can trigger. Basically, if there's deployment, go post on my Twitter page saying, I just deployed a new version. Have the whole workflow automated so that you don't have to go remember every time that after you do a deployment, you have to do all these taxes. Basically, have it everything automated for you. I'm going to show you actually how that whole engine is working, but that's going to be later on the session. So for now, that was just using Zapier, but I'm going to show you exactly how that works and how you can have your own URLs to hit. The second thing I want to talk about is using web jobs through Visual Studio. How many of you use web jobs? Know what web jobs are? Okay, so a good number. So basically what web jobs are, they are very lightweight worker. You can think of it as a lightweight worker role. If you have a site and you say you want to send a newsletter once a month, and instead of having to go and stand up a worker role or having to remember to do it yourself, basically you can stand a scheduled web job and say every month run this EXE. And every month this web job is going to run and do your logic. So you can do that right from Visual Studio, right from within Visual Studio. And the way you do that is like this. I have here the web app. I'm going to right click. I'm going to say add. I'm going to say a new Azure web job. So I'm going to add a new Azure web job. And this is going to come up. I'm going to give it a name. So I'm going to say TechEd demo web job. I'm going to specify. So you have one of the three options. You can either have it run continuously. That basically means like a Windows service. It's always running. And you handle your own sleeping or your own waiting. And if it dies, if it happens to die, we're always going to start it up again. Or you can run it on a schedule, and you can specify what the schedule is. Or you can run it on demand. Just for the demo, I'm going to choose to run it on demand. I'm going to say OK. So I'm going to create a web job in this web application. And now, as you can see, it's just a very simple console app. In this case, I'm going to just write something to the console. Dot write line. I'm going to say hello web job. I'm going to save this, and then I'm going to publish my site. So in this case, I'm going to use Visual Studio Publishing, which uses WebDeploy. So it actually builds on the client and then goes to Azure. And from Visual Studio, I can actually browse all the sites that I have on my account. OK. So I'm going to use the web job demo site. And it's going to fetch everything, and I just hit publish. And if I go here now to that site, which was this one, and I go to the web job tab, web jobs tab, I should see the web job that I just published. Should show up here. Sometimes it's slow the first time. Yeah, so this is the web job I just added. I can view the logs here, but of course it never ran before, so there are no logs. So this is going to be empty. But because it's a triggered web job or on-demand web job, so I can run it from the portal here. So I can just hit run once, and that's going to trigger it to run once. And if I go in here now, here, it just ran half a second ago, and I can go view the logs for it. And the log is going to just say, hello, web job. I can go back, and then I can run it a couple more times. So now we're at it three times. I come here. I should see three logs show up. So this was the first one. And then there are two more. They're going to be exactly the same. So another way to deploy a web job would basically be to add it from here. So if you have a zip file that contains everything, you can add it from here. But adding it from Visual Studio makes it a lot simpler because you can deploy it along with your site. So if you have a new version of your site, you have a new version of your web job, you just deploy both together right from within Visual Studio. So that's the web jobs. Now I'm going to talk about a new feature which builds on top of site slots. This feature is called testing production. So if you remember when I first talked about slots, I said you have a production slot and a staging slot. Now 100% of your production traffic is going to your production slot, and nothing is going to your staging slot. You verify that it's working and you think it's good enough, and then you do a swap. But that's not always good enough for you. Maybe you want to be able to test your staging first in production before you actually swap it completely. So what this allows you to do, what testing production allows you to do, is say, OK, take a percentage of my production traffic, in this case 20%, and send it to my staging slot. And let the rest go to the production slot. And if you're happy with it, you can increase it to 30%, 50%. If you're completely happy, you can just swap the whole thing and have 100% go to your new version, and so on. So it makes testing a lot easier. So let me actually demo how we can do that. So to use this feature, you're going to have to go to the new preview portal for Azure, because it's only there for now. I have a website here while that loads. OK, so I have a website here that's called Testing and Production Demo. And if I browse to it, you're going to see that it says production site. So this is my production site. Now if I go to my staging slot, it's just a different version. It says staging. So I have this staging slot, and the other one was the production. And 100% of the traffic that's coming to this URL, which is the production URL, goes to the production version. So what I can do here now is I can go to my site, scroll down a bit here, and then I find this testing and production part. I'm going to pick it, and it says that 100% is going to production. I want to change that, so I'm going to change to staging. I'm going to specify 50% just for the demo. I'm going to hit save. And as soon as I do that, now if I come here and I hit refresh, I'm still going to the production slot. The way this works, actually, and you can check it, is if you open the developer tools here and you go to the cookie section, you will see here, this cookie, which is called tibmix. And that basically a random number that we generate between 0 and 100. And if it's above 50, then it goes to one. If it's below 50, then it goes to the other one. In this case, if it's above 50, it goes to the production slot. So I'm going to delete this cookie. I'm going to refresh the site again. Again, I got 69, which is above 50. I'm going to refresh again. Now I got 26. So I got the staging slot. So that basically tries to split your customers. Some get this version, some get this version, and they stick to it for the most part until they close their browser or they browse again, and then they might get a different version. So, so that basically testing in production. It doesn't have to be between two slots. We allow you to have up to 5 slots as well as the production slot. So you can have multiple versions, and you test different versions, some customers here, some customer there, and you can route traffic as you'd like. And after, now I'm going to remove this one. I just delete it. And I hit save. And now my production has the 100% again. So that is very quickly the new feature that is testing production. So by this, that concludes the first section of the talk, which is about development and deployment. So hopefully that got you interested about all the tools that we have for you in development and deployment. Now we're going to be talking about some debugging and investigation tools. And the first tools we're going to talk about are the tools that are built right into Visual Studio. So Visual Studio has a lot of great tools for debugging and investigating issues when you're developing your site. And let's start by looking at, so this is the project that I want to look at. So the first thing I want to show you is the log streaming features that we have. So let's actually go back here. And I have a site here that is called VS Demo. And what you can do is, if you notice here, I'm using trace.trace information, and I'm throwing some trace information from my site. And this site is the actual code for here, is running this code, and when I refresh it, it's actually throwing these trace information, but I have no way of looking at it. Now I can write it to a file and I can go look at it afterwards, but I can also stream it directly into Visual Studio. So the way that works is if you expand Server Explorer, you'll find an Azure node. And then if I go expand it and expand websites, it's going to connect to Azure and get a list of my websites. Come on. Come on. OK, so I have a list of my websites. And then I'm going to click on this website, which is the one I'm using. I'm going to say View Streaming Logs. What's that going to do is that it's going to open this window here that's saying it's connected to the log streaming service. Now, if I go to my site and I refresh it, you see the logs, the trace information shows here right away. So I have where I'm tracing where the function is and how many requests so far. So every time I keep refreshing this, I can trace the information right away. So this is streaming the logs from Azure right into Visual Studio, so I can view the logs. I can see if my logs are sufficient, if they will help me to debug informations, to debug issues when issues arise in production, or if I need to add more logs or make it clearer or something. So that's the first tool in Visual Studio, which is log streaming. Then you can also view the files of your site right from within Visual Studio. So if you actually look here, if you expand your site, you'll actually get to look at the files and you look at the log files. And then you can expand this, and you can actually view the actual files that are in your site So it's very useful for quick debugging. If you want to look at the log, if you want to download something from your site, you can very quickly come to it here and just view this page and double click on it, and then Visual Studio is going to open it. And then I can very quickly look at it and see what's going on. So that is the second one. The last tool I'm going to talk about in Visual Studio is actually using the remote debugger. How many of you have used remote debugging in Visual Studio and Azure websites? Okay, I see a couple of hands. So basically what that allows you to do is allows you to attach a debugger to the actual process that is running on Azure and debug it in Visual Studio that's running on your machine. And it's very easy to actually set that up. All you have to do is go back to the Server Explorer, right-click on the website that you want to debug, and say attach a debugger. And that's it. That is going to attach to launch a debugger session on Azure and open a connection to your local box and connect Visual Studio to it. And if we see now, we should actually hit this breakpoint. So now I hit this breakpoint. I'm just going to hit go for now. And then this site came. I can refresh again. And this time, I actually want to change something to show you that it's an actual live debugger that's running. So I'm going to take this. And my immediate window, I'm just going to change it to TechEd, change the whole thing to test demo. And then I'm going to hit go. And you can see, so I'm debugging from local Visual Studio into the actual site that's running on Azure. And you can see, You can see that it's actually running on Azure, and I'm able to debug into it. I'm able to read the memory and to do all the normal debugging tool, use all the normal VS debugging tools to debug a site that's running all the way in Azure. So this is very useful, and I actually do use it all the time when I'm working on apps that I run on Azure websites. So these are the tools that are built in Visual Studio. However, remote debugging is not just unique to Visual Studio. You can actually remote debug Java applications that are also running in Azure, because we support running Java applications. Did any of you actually run Java applications on Azure? OK. I'm going to demo it anyway, in case you start using Java on Azure. But basically, I have here a site that is called Java Demo. And all that site does is actually I need to maybe restart it. And all that site does is basically it dumps a whole bunch of information about Java in this page. So what I'm going to do is launch the debugger. Now, debugging Java applications is a bit more complicated than debugging Visual Studio, because the debugger is not, Eclipse doesn't know about Azure, so it's sort of more involved, but it's very easy to set up. And there is a link that I have on the slide that actually tells you how to set everything up. But basically, you need to run a command that looks like this. And that starts the debug session in your local box. And if you can see here, I'm giving it my site name and then the publishing credentials for my site. And that's going to start a debugger session on my box. And then I'm going to go into Eclipse. I'm going to say debug configuration. And then I'm going to connect them to the same port that this guy is running on. And hit debug. And that is Let's try that again. So let's launch this debugger and then come here and connect to it. OK, now it's successfully connected. And this guy is going to finish right now. And that's also not unique to Eclipse. Any Java debugger that supports the Java debug wire protocol should work. And that's Eclipse and a bunch of other IDEs as well. I think it's a standard debugging protocol for Java. So that's going to finish now. And then I'm going to go into the debug view. And as you can see, it's loading the threads that are running on the process on Azure. I'm going to set a breakpoint here. I actually have it set already. So where it prints the name, and then I'm going to refresh this page. And if I have any luck, that should actually break here. Yeah, so it stopped here, and I can see all the variables. I'm going to change one of them. So let's change this. So I have the name here, which is, you can see, gets printed here, and I have the value should show up below it. I'm just going to change the value to something else, something random. I'm going to change it to any other number. Then I'm going to remove my breakpoint and hit go. And as you can see, it's there. So I can remote debug .NET applications, and I can remote debug Java applications that are running on Azure from my local box. So let's, and this is the URL that you can go to if you want to know how to set up Java debugging. It's basically a Git repo that has the script that you have to run in your local box to start the session. And it has a bunch of documentation here of how you can do that. Let's go back here. So now I want to talk about Kudu. How many of you know what Kudu is or what the SCM site is? OK, I see a few hands. So basically, every time you go and create a site on Azure, let's say foo.azurewebsites.net, there is actually a sibling site that's called foo.scm.azurewebsites.net that gets created. This site is, first of all, authenticated. Only you can access it. When you go to this URL, you're going to be prompted to use your Azure credentials to log in. So it's authenticated. However, it runs in the same security context as your main site. So it's great to look at the files and look at environment variables and debug and investigate what's going on with the main site from a different view of the site. So let's actually take a look at Kudu and see how we can use that. So here I have a site that I'm using that's called, it's a node site that is just a very simple Hello World node site. If I look at the URL here, and I go to, and I add .scm in this section, and I hit go, it's actually going to, I already logged in, so it's not asking me to log in, but if this was a private session, for example, it's going to ask me to log in. So as you can see here, I'm logged in as my username. And this is Kudu. It's very rough UI, but it's very, very useful. So you can, for example, look at things like environment. So this is the same environment that I was talking about that the Kudu site shares with the main site. So you can look at all the environment variables, all the app settings that the site has, the connection strings, and everything here. You can also look at, we have also a console app here that runs, that's very useful. So you can run Kudu console from here. For example, I'm going to run the PowerShell one. And what that gives you, basically, it launches a PowerShell process on the server and gives you an interface in the browser. So I can do any PowerShell command here. Get process. So it's actual PowerShell. It's running on the server. And it's very useful. I end up using this all the time to basically look at issues, debug issues, copy files, and so on. You also have at the top here a file explorer, a very basic file explorer that allows you to look at the content of your site. You can download folders, and it's going to zip and download it for you. You can download individual files, just as you would download a folder. You can also edit these files in a very basic text editor. So it's really nice for quick investigations, and if you want to look at something really quickly. What you can also do is you can say, I want to create a folder here. So I'm going to create a folder called Tools, and then I'm going to go into Tools. You can drag and drop to upload stuff. So I'm going to go here. I can upload an MSI. I can upload my tools here and then run them from the command line. Or I can upload a zip file. And it's going to upload the zip file. Now, a zip file is interesting because when you actually drag the zip file, it's going to show you a target here that you can drag it into. And it's basically going to extract it as it writes it to the disk. So it's even a third deployment mechanism that's very easy and very quick. If you want to test something quickly. The last feature I want to talk about in Kudu is actually called Process Explorer at the top here. So right, I said because Kudu runs in the same security context as your main site, so it has access to all the processes of the main site. So if I go here, I can see the SCM site, which is this one. This is the process that's running Kudu, and these are the processes that are running the main site. It's a node site, so there's a node process running here. And I can do stuff like I can kill a process. I can look into more information about a process. So that will give me a view that lists everything about this process, all the general information, the modules that are loaded, the file handles that are open, the threads, and the environment variables, and so on. So it's very convenient. You can think of it as the client-side Process Explorer. It's a lot simpler. It's of course less features than the client-side Process Explorer, but you can also get mini dumps, and you can get GC dumps if you want to get that. So, more about Kudu. So Kudu is actually an open source project. It's on GitHub. You can go there. We do accept contributions. And Kudu is also more than just debugging tools for the site. Kudu is actually the deployment engine that I was talking about in the very beginning. Kudu is actually when you do Git deploy or when you link to GitHub, it all goes through Kudu. So what does that mean? That basically means that the logic that I was talking about, detecting the site and detecting the type of the project that you're pushing and generating the correct deployment script for it is actually running in Kudu. So when I mentioned that you can actually customize the post-deployment hooks, that will actually be through Kudu. So if you go here and in tools and you look at webhooks, this is where you would add a URL to actually hit after deployment is done. And if I were to go to the Kudu site of this, a site that I already set up with Zapier. So this is the site that I set up earlier with Zapier to call me after a deployment is done. SCM. If I were to go here and look at webhooks, I should see one that says that Zapier was able to register here, and it's a post-deployment hook. So every time there's deployment, we call this. If I want to remove it, I can remove it from here. I can add another one there. And if you actually want to look at it, you can just add any URL here and test and see what you get back. And you're going to get a JSON that looks like this. Looks like this, basically. It has the ID of the commit, it has the status, it has the author name, and the message of deployment, and so on. So this is a quick look at Kudu. Kudu is also a site extension. How many of you know about site extensions? Okay, we're going to be talking more about site extensions later in the session, but Kudu is just a site extension, and that will be clearer as we move on. The final feature that I want to talk about in this section is called the support site. Basically, if you go to the SCM site /support, you end up in this support view. And what that gives you is a live view of the number of requests that are currently hitting your site. It also gives you an ability to analyze and debug on per-request base and get more real-time debugging for your site. So basically, let's take a look at that. I'm going to launch a background load on my site. So I'm going to send 10 requests per second. Then I'm going to go to the support portal and see what that looks like there. So like I said, just have to go to SCM and then support. And if I go there, take a second to load. So if you can see here now, it's saying that there's a load that started. It's saying that you're getting around 7 requests per second. It updates every 10 seconds, so we should see something now. So now it's up to 10 requests per second. And basically, the delay here is 10 seconds. So if your site, when you go to your SCM /support, you can see how many requests your site is getting right now, or at least 10 seconds ago. So for example, let's say there was an issue and I broke my site. Just to simulate that, I'm going to go here. I'm going to change the config to basically break it, and make it an invalid config, so all the requests should start failing. So if I go here, this is the IIS config file. I'm just going to make it an invalid XML. I'm going to hit save. And then if I go here, in 10 or 20 seconds, I will start seeing requests failing and showing here in red. So maybe not this time, maybe the next time. So it started showing the failure requests, the error requests. The next one is going to have a lot more. Yeah, so now all the requests are failing. So if you have a site that's running on Azure and then you hear that, oh, some customers are experiencing errors or seeing 500s or something, you can very quickly come here and see how many requests are you getting per second and how many of them are good requests, 200, and how many of them are errors. So if I go now and I fix the mistake that I made in the config here, basically fix it again, hit save, come here in 10 seconds or 20 seconds, it should all die down and everything is going to be a success again. So it's a very nice way to actually look at the live view of the requests that are coming to your site. Another thing you can do in the support portal as well is this Analyze tab. So this is the Observe tab, which is the first one. The Analyze one actually lets you set up analyze sessions. And these can be per request basis. So basically you say, if a request takes longer than 10 seconds, take a memory dump of that request so that you can analyze it later to figure out what's going on. Or if a request spikes the memory or spikes the CPU, then take a memory dump of that request so that I can analyze it later. You can set up the diagnostic sessions here. I'm not going to do that for now. But yeah, so if I go back here now, all the errors died down and everything is success again. So this is the support portal. And again, you can reach to it from the SCM site /support. Or if you just go to Kudu, there is actually a link there as well under tools. There is a link for support here, which takes you exactly to the same page as this one. So that is the support side. Now, moving on to management and administration, how you can manage your site and how you can administer creating sites and managing them. Basically, there are a lot of tools that you can use. You can use the Azure portals, whether it's the new one or the old one. You can use the Azure APIs directly. You can use the command line tool that I used earlier. You can use PowerShell. You can use IIS Manager if you're more familiar with IIS. Or you can even use Visual Studio. As we saw, you can actually go in Visual Studio and create sites. However, this is more of the old way of doing things. You basically, every time you need an Azure resource, you write a script that goes and creates it. Say you have an app, and this app requires a website, a database, a storage account, and a Redis cache, for example. This is what your app requires to work. So what you would do normally is, at least in the old days, is you would go and you create a script that basically goes and creates a website, and creates a SQL database, and creates a Redis cache, and creates a storage account, and basically you go and try to take all the configuration from everything and put it for the site so that it can talk to all these resources. However, Azure now is introducing a new concept, which is called the Azure Resource Manager. How many of you have heard of the Azure Resource Manager? Okay, I see a couple of hands. So the Azure Resource Manager is a very nice abstraction on top of these things. Basically, you go and you create a resource group. And that resource group is basically this logical collection that describes your app. Basically, one resource group in this case is going to contain the website, and it's going to contain the SQL server and the storage account in one resource group. So when you go to portal and you click on the resource group, you see everything that's related to one app. What you can also do is you can create an Azure Resource Manager template, or ARM template. And this ARM template, again, describes this resource group. And the nice thing about the ARM template is that it's you can apply it multiple times, and it's always going to result in the same thing. It's not, like, say the first time you applied it, you forgot to add a setting to the website. So you go to your template, you add the setting, and you apply the whole template again. It's not going to create a new site. It's going to realize that there's a site with that name, and the only difference is that the template now has a new setting. I need to go and add it to the existing site. So what does that look like, actually? It's a JSON template, so it looks something like this. This is a very simplified view of how a template looks like. It basically a collection of resources. So in this case, it's a server farm, which also known as a web hosting plan. So it describes how many servers I want my site to run on, and a site. So this is a very, very simple ARM template. The actual template looks something like this. So if I zoom in here, I can parameterize my template. So things that are parameterized by default, like names, for example, I add it in a parameter section. So I have a site name, I have a hosting plan name, I have a site location, and SKU, and so on. These are parameters for my template. So let me minimize that part. And then here's the resource part. In this template, I only have two resources. There's only a server farm and a site. And this describes the server farm, and this describes the site. And the way I would use this template is using PowerShell. So if I go to PowerShell here, when you actually use PowerShell, you can run PowerShell in one of two modes. The old mode, which basically you create every resource by yourself and you manage it by yourself, or you can run it in the new mode, which, and this is how you switch PowerShell. You do switch, Azure mode, and name, and then you're switching to the new mode, which is going to be the Azure Resource Manager mode. If I can type. OK. So now I switched PowerShell into the new mode, which is the Azure Resource Manager mode. I now can do new. Actually, let me make sure add Azure account. Let's make sure it's connected. So, yeah, so this is my subscription. It went and pulled down all my subscriptions. What I can do now is I can do new Azure resource group. I can give my resource group a name, so I'm going to call it TechEd Demo Resource Group. I can give it a location. I'm just going to choose West US. I don't have to give it a deployment name, and then I have to give it a template file, which is here. I have my template file, which this one, you can see at the top here. It's in C, repos, CSM templates, and then the create site JSON. And then PowerShell is right away going to parse this file, and it's going to figure out that there are a bunch of parameters that I need to fill. So the site name, for example, which is the one that's pulling from here. So I'm going to give the site name. I'm going to say TechEd Demo Resource Group site. And then I need to give a hosting plan name. I'm going to use the same thing. Web hosting plan. And then I have to give it a location. Site location is going to be West US. And then the SKU and the worker size, they have default values, so I'm just going to use these default values. So I'm not going to actually specify anything. And that's it. So I just submit the template, and I wait. Basically, what PowerShell is going to do now is going to upload this template with the parameters to Azure Resource Manager. And Azure Resource Manager is going to take this template and create all these resources for me. I don't have to actually go create them one by one. If I decided that I need to add an extra setting here, I can just go add it and then upload the template again, and then Azure Resource Manager is going to figure that the only thing that's new here is just one new setting, and just going to go set it. It's not going to change everything. So what that gives us is a very simple way. Say you want to deploy your app. You have an instance of your app that's running in the US, and then you want to run an instance in Europe, or you want to run an instance in Australia or in Asia. You don't have to go and recreate everything manually or run a script that might be error-prone. Basically, you have this declarative template that you declare all the resources that you require and with a bunch of parameters and just go apply it over and over again, and then you get an entire resource group. And here, as you can see, it's successful. So if I go into portal here and I go portal, and I look, I should have a new resource group here that has one website in it that's called what we called it here. So if I go browse and I go resource groups, here's the resource group that we just created. If I click on it, it's going to have one website. All it has is one resource, and that resource is a website that's called TechEd Demo Resource Group Site. So the first question that came to me when I first saw this is, how am I supposed to know how to craft these templates? Like, it looks like a lot of stuff that I don't necessarily know off the top of my head, like how to craft these templates. So there is a very nice way to learn how to do these templates. You can actually look at a bunch of templates that actually exist on Azure and use them to customize your own template. And the way you would do that is you can do get dash get Azure resource. Group gallery template. So if you do get Azure resource group gallery template, that's going to list all the templates that we have in the Azure gallery. And as you can see, there are a lot of templates here. There are ones for WordPress, for different web apps, for different VMs, for different services. So let's look at one of them. Let's look at one for WordPress, for example. So if I take this and I do save, it's basically the same command but with save. So if I do this, it's going to download the template for me, and then I can open it. And I can look at it. So this is a template, for example, that's going to go and create a WordPress site. And as you can see, there's a bunch of parameters here, site name, site location, and so on, exactly like we saw. But there's an extra one here for database. So it takes a database name, database location, SKU, some settings for that are specific for WordPress, for authentication and stuff. So these are all parameters. If I go and look at the resources, I can see that it's creating a ClearDB database, which is a MySQL database. It's also creating a web hosting plan, because it's creating a website, and it's creating a website. And it's setting, and when it creates a website, the website is marked as depends on the web hosting plan, and it should also depend on the SQL database, which is it's using here. So it's creating the SQL database first and then basically passing the information to the site so the site can talk to the SQL database. And if I minimize that, it's also setting some application insights for me. So setting monitoring for the web hosting plan for a bunch of CPU and alerts, setting some alerts for the web hosting plan and so on. So this is one template for WordPress. But you can look at a lot of other templates for a lot of other things here. There's Scalable WordPress, which basically allows WordPress to scale. There's Wikimedia. There are a lot of templates here that you can just go and look at and see how these templates are crafted and basically build your own template for your own app. And it's a great way to learn how to do these templates. So that's basically a quick view into the Azure Resource Manager. Now I'm going to demo how to actually manage an Azure website using IIS Manager. So say you have the website, and then you want to change some settings in the website. You can use the Azure portal, but it doesn't have all the IIS settings in it, because there are a lot of IIS settings that not everybody uses, but every now and then you might need to change one. So if you want to do that, you can actually connect IIS Manager, which you have in your local box. If you're familiar with IIS, this is what it looks like. You can connect it to an Azure website and manage that Azure website using this. And the way you do that is you do file, let me zoom in, and you do connect to a site. And then it's going to ask you for site information. You get this information from the publishing profile for the site. So let me go here. So this is a site that I'm going to be working on. It's called Kudu Demo. And it has a web.config here. And if you look at it before we make any changes, it's empty. So I'm going to download the publishing profile for this site. I go to, into Kudu, where is it? Kudu Demo. And then I say download publishing profile. So this is the publishing profile for the Kudu Demo site. I think I need the URL, which is this one. This is the first thing I need. And then I'm going to call it just Kudu Demo. Hit next. A username, the username is here. And then the password, which is here. Next. Connection name, yes. So now a connection is established to my site. I can now manage my site using a familiar IIS interface. So for example, say I want to add a default document. So if I go here, these are the default documents that we add by default in Azure. What I can do is I can add an extra one. Let me add one that's called testdemo.html. I'm going to add it. So it's added here, and it says, if I actually go to my site that's in Azure, so let me go here. If you remember, this config was empty. But if I look now, it has the configuration that I just added from the IIS manager. So that way, I can manage my IIS site from IIS manager itself. Now, if you notice, all these settings here, they get saved into web.config. So anything that needs to go into the global IIS configuration, you can't do from here. But anything that you see here, basically, you can change. And everything you change from here is going to end up in the web.config for that site. So that's the IIS manager. Now, I'm going to move into a different feature, which is called RBAC, or role-based authentication control. How many of you are familiar with RBAC or heard about it? OK. So basically, on Azure now, moving forward, every Azure resource is going to support what we call RBAC, or role-based authentication control. And what that is basically they're going to support three roles. Every resource is going to support these three main roles. And maybe there will be more in the future. But for now, there are these three roles. The owner role, which is the user that owns the resource. So say you have a website. And since you created the website, you're marked as the owner for the website. You can add another one as the owner as well. Or you can add them as a contributor, which means that they contribute to your site. Or you can add them as a reader, which means they can only see read information about the site. Like maybe they can see performance data, they can see that the site exists, where is it, a bunch of information about the site. They, of course, can't read secret information about the site, like the username and password, because then they can become a contributor if they want. But basically, it's a lot more logical way of managing your resources than the old mode, which just had a co-admin. If you've used Azure before, in the old days, it basically you can just add somebody as a co-admin to your entire subscription, which they basically will have access to everything in your subscription. However, moving forward, you can manage it on resource base. So let's actually see how that works. So I'm going to log in into Portal here using an account that I created that doesn't have an Azure subscription. So if I go to Portal, I'm going to go test at outlook.com. So I'm logging in here. This account doesn't even have an Azure subscription. So when I log in, I'm not going to see anything. I'm not going to have access to anything, basically. So if I do browse, well, there is one from before. But if I actually scroll down, I can't really see. I don't have access to anything. Even if I click on this guy, it should fail. Yeah, it's failing because I had it before, but then I removed myself. But I don't have access to anything. So let me actually give this guy a read access to my site. So I'm going to come here. I'm going to come here in the new portal and then go to one of my sites. Let's go into sites. And this is the site I was using for continuous deployment. if I scroll all the way to the bottom here, I see this access part, which basically manages the access, and it says that this site has one owner right now, which is me, because I created it. So I'm going to add another reader to this site. I'm going to hit add, and I already have this account here, because I used it before, so I'm going to set OK. And then that other account is added as a reader to this site. So if I go back here and I hit refresh, if I waited, it would have shown, but I think this is faster. I can then hit browse, and now I can see a bunch of more things. I can hit browse sites, and I should be able to have access to that site now. So now that site shows up, because I was added as a reader to this site. But if I click on it, because I'm just a reader, you will see I won't have access to most of the things here, so everything's going to disappear because I can't really stop or change any of the site status because I'm a reader. I can view some performance metrics and some stuff about the site, but I can't change anything because I'm a reader. Also, if I go to this site, I can't access the SCM endpoint for that site. Like if I go to the SCM endpoint, because you saw that the SCM endpoint is very powerful, so we don't want somebody who just had read access to be able to access all this information. So basically saying, I'm not authorized to access it. So let me promote this guy from a reader to a contributor and see what differences do we see. Remove. Yes. Okay, let's try just to add them, another contributor. Oh, so it was already removed. Okay, so now I added him as a contributor. If I come here and I refresh this page, and while that's loading, I can go to the SCM site. Now I should have access to the SCM site. So just by adding them as a contributor, now they have access to the SCM site. So they can access the SCM endpoint. They can access all the Kudu stuff from here. They can do Git publishing. And then if they come here and they click on the site, a lot more things should light up here now. So if you see all the commands are going to light up. So I can stop the site. I can restart it. I can look at the publishing profile. I can change the settings and so on. So this kind of control is actually per resource control. So you can give somebody access to one site and not the other, to one site and database and not everything else and so on. So this is our back. Now, actually, the last thing I'm going to talk about is site extensions. So I mentioned this before when we talked about Kudu. I mentioned that Kudu is just a site extension. So what's a site extension? A site extension is any app that runs under the SCM site. And by the fact that it's running under the SCM site, only the owner or the contributor of the site have access to it. Now, this app is authenticated. And also runs in the same security context of the main site. Because of these two things, basically there are two main different types of site extensions that you can run. You can run a site extension like Kudu, and what that allows you to do is basically hack on the main site, like look at the processes, look at the files, change the files, download them, upload new files, and so on. Or you can use a site extension like Visual Studio Online Monaco. And what that allows you to do is basically it gives you an editor inside your site. So you can create a div box on the cloud under a site. And it works like this. Let me actually show you what I have. So I have here a site that I'm calling Monaco Div Box. And basically, I'm collaborating with my coworkers on their site from the cloud because I don't have Visual Studio on my machine, or I'm using a tablet, or I'm using a Mac. So I don't necessarily have Visual Studio. But what I do is, I can go and create a site here and go and install an extension to it. So I'm going to install the extension of Visual Studio. So I'm going to install this extension. I'm going to say OK. Then that should take a second to install. So it's going to get installed on my site. Now, if I actually browse to the main site, it's just an empty site. There's nothing there. But if I browse to this extension, I should get a Visual Studio view for my, yeah, so I have Visual Studio here. Then what I can do is I can go to the Git repo that we were both working on. In this case, it's the main one that I was working on earlier, which is this one. I'm gonna clone it here. So now I have Visual Studio Environment running on the cloud. And what I can do is I can go and change a file. So let's change a view here, like the home view that we changed earlier. So I'm going to come here. I'm going to take a demo from Monaco. And then I can go here into Git, and I see that there's a diff. And I can see the dev. So it's a full Visual Studio environment that's running. It's authenticated, so only I can access it. And then I'm happy with this change. I'm gonna say testing Monaco. And then I'm gonna hit commit, which is here. So that's gonna commit the change. Now I have also a console here, which I can go. I can do a git push origin master. Actually, let me zoom in a bit. And that's going to ask me for my username and password. Just like if I was using Visual Studio in my local box. And now I pushed into master, and that should, because this is the site that we have registered for continuous deployment, so that should actually trigger a continuous deployment here. If we can look. And sure enough, it's there, it's running. And so I can browse to it now. And this is a change I made for Monaco. So these are the two types of site extensions that you can run. You can run a site extension that works as an admin tool that hacks on your main site, or you can run a site extension that works as just an authenticated endpoint. An authenticated endpoint. And if you look, we have a gallery here of some site extensions. You can write your own site extension, upload it to the gallery, or upload it to the site yourself. Some of the site extensions here lie in the first category, which are tools that hack on your main site or give you some admin view from main site. Stuff like image minifier. Basically, it looks through the images you have in your main site and tries to minify them. You have things like New Relic, which actually adds monitoring to your site. There are things also like the search portal, which uses Azure Search and basically gives you a view of Azure Search if you use Azure Search. So this is, I think, is the last thing. So now what you have is you have the Azure Websites platform, which is the one at the bottom here. You have your main site, which is the site, your production site, you can think of it, or the user site, which is foo.azurewebsites.net. And then there is foo.scm.azurewebsites.net. And inside that, two things run. There are pre-installed site extensions, things like Monaco and Kudu we actually do and we actually work on. WebDeploy actually runs as a site extension, so does WebJobs. And then you have Bring Your Own Site Extension that you can get from the gallery. Like I just showed you, you can actually write your own and upload it to the gallery. The gallery is just a NuGet gallery that you can reach from here. It's just siteextensions.net. It's just a NuGet gallery that you can go and create your own package and upload it. And as soon as you upload it here, it's going to show up in the Ibiza portal under site extensions here. So if you have a cool idea for a site extension, you can upload it there and it's going to show up here right away. So that's my session. I think we have only a few minutes, but if you have any questions, please do ask. And also don't forget to evaluate the session. And any questions? Well, thank you very much. I hope it was.